working feverishly throughout the last days of November and the early days of December, the men of the Armada de Malacca purchased and stored clothes until they had no more trinkets, caps, bells, mirrors, hatchets, scissors, or bolts of cloth to exchange for spices, and no more room to store the aromatic treasure. The ships reeked of the fragrant cloves. Every breath the sailors drew was permeated with the sense of wealth, ease, and luxury. Crew members busied themselves in bending and decorating the sails for the ships, restoring the rigging and making sure the vessels would be able to withstand the rigors of the journey home. When hoisted, the sheets revealed a freshly painted design, an elaborate cross, and beneath it the legend, "This is the sign of our good fortune." As that bold legend indicated, the officers and crew of the Armada were proud of their accomplishments. Their voyage finally demonstrated what Columbus and so many others explorers had failed to show, that a water route to the Moluccas existed, and that it was possible to reach the east by sailing west. Those who had survived the grueling journey could look back on countless moments of courage and even heroism that helped to bring them to this place, and they could console themselves with dreams of glory and avarice. As the hour of departure approached, the pace of activity quickened. The fleet took on board 80 casks of water and a supply of wood cut by 100 laborers assigned to the task by the King of Bacan, who rallied to the cause of the Armada and Spain. On the day of departure, the kings of all the Spice Islands assembled on the island of Mar to see the fleet off. Victoria weighed anchor and set sail, standing off the harbor awaiting Trinidad, the flagship, to join her. The ship's gunners fired their artillery one more time. But in the midst of the excitement, Trinidad's cables fouled, and to the dismay of everyone, she began taking on water. None of the eyewitnesses supplied a reason for the near disaster. Most likely the ship had not been adequately repaired during the long layover on Simbanban. But the leak was worse than ever, and she was in danger of losing her cargo of spices. "With her sister ship in distress," said Pigafetta, "Victoria returned to her anchorage, and we immediately began to lighten Trinidad to see whether we could repair her. We found that the water was rushing in as through a pipe, but we were unable to find where it was coming in. All that day and the next, we did nothing but work the pump." The work was grueling but necessary. The loss of Trinidad would have been a disaster, depriving the Armada of the rewards of its long-sought-after spices. Even worse, Victoria lacked room to hold the crews of both vessels. The arduous pumping continued until the men were exhausted. Laden with spices, the flagship of the fleet was on the verge of sinking at her mooring. As soon as Almanzor heard about the plight of Trinidad, he sprang into action, boarding the afflicted ship and prowling below deck, trying to locate the source of the damnable leak, but without success. "Then," said Pigafetta, "he sent 5 men into the water to see whether they could discover the hole. They remained more than 1/2 hour, but were quite unable to find the leak." The ship was listing badly, and desperate measures were required, as Pigafetta described. Seeing that he could not help us, and the water was increasing hourly, he said, almost in tears, that he would send to the head of the island for 3 men who could remain underwater a long time. Almanzor went in search of them as the ship slowly but unmistakably settled into the water. After an anxious night, Almanzor reappeared with the men by first light of dawn. Pigafetta said, "He immediately sent them into the water with their hair hanging loose so that they could locate the leak by that means. Water entering into the ship would draw strands of their hair into its current." But even these men failed to locate the leak, and when they emerged grim-faced from the water, the king finally broke down in tears. "Who among them," he pleaded, "would be able to return to Spain now and tell King Charles about the loyalty of the King of Tador?" Pigafetta and the others tried to calm the distraught ruler by describing their new plan for returning to Spain. said Pigafetta. We replied to him that Victoria would go there in order not to lose east winds that were beginning to blow, while the other ship, until being refitted, would await west winds and go then to Darien, which is located in the other part of the sea in the country of Yucatan. Her cargo of spices would then be transferred to mules, and the beasts would carry the spices to another Spanish fleet headed for Seville. As devoted and helpful as ever, Almanzor pledged no fewer than 250 carpenters to perform all the work, so Pigafetta said, required to return Trinidad to seaworthiness, and he promised to treat all the sailors who remained behind as if they were his own sons. The king's sincerity and generosity finally wore away the officer's skepticism. The unsuccessful efforts to repair Trinidad's mysterious leak and the deliberations leading to the decision that Victoria would return alone consumed 5 days. Victoria was so dilapidated that many crew members refused to board her. They preferred to remain with Trinidad in Tidore until she was repaired. So the crew divided itself between the two ships, each man seeking the lesser of two evils, Victoria, the flimsy vessel that would depart for Spain immediately, or the much larger Trinidad, which needed weeks, if not months, of repairs before she could begin her journey home. In the end, Carvalho was designated captain of Trinidad, and Elcano took over the command of Victoria. Pigafetta faced the most critical decision of the entire journey. Which ship would he join? His instinct for survival had stood many tests, and he elected to go along with Elcano aboard Victoria. That ship would carry him along with her crew of about 60 men, including 16 Indians. Although he detested the Basque mariner, he clearly had more confidence in Elcano's seamanship than in Carvalho's. Early on the morning of December 21st, Almanzor, ever helpful, came aboard Victoria for the last time, delivering two pilots, paid for by the crew, to guide the ship safely through the maze of islands and shoals. Then the king took his leave. This should have been a festive occasion, the ships bulging with spices, heading for home port in the prospect of a grand reception from King Charles. But the damage to Trinidad dramatically altered the final leg of this voyage around the world and mocked the proud legend painted on her sails. The crew faced more than the ordinary pangs of leaving port for another long journey at sea. They knew their lives would be at risk the moment they were out of sight of the Spice Islands. Despite the obstacles they had faced, the men of the Armada had always taken comfort in the knowledge that they had extra ships at their disposal. Even two ships had a reasonable chance of making it back to Seville, but one ship was hardly equal to the task, no matter how skillful the crew's seamanship or how favorable the winds. One ship, alone on the high seas, was always at the mercy of storms, shoals, pirates, termites, or faulty navigation. On the high seas, no king can protect them, and at least one sovereign, the King of Portugal, wanted them dead. Yet they had no choice but to face the test presented by the 10,000-mile-long route home. Laden with cloves and about 60 survivors, Victoria left the island of Tidore on December 21st, 1521. Heading southwest, she called at a small island nearby to load firewood and resumed her southerly course toward one of the most dangerous stretches of ocean in the world, the Cape of Good Hope. The character of the expedition had changed completely. The Armada de Molucca finally had its spices, but it had lost its soul. The absence of Magellan's guiding hand, his fierce discipline, even his quixotic delusions of grandeur, left the two remaining ships and their crew members without a sense of overriding purpose. Only survival mattered now. Even if the crew survived the voyage home, they were anxious about the reception they would receive in Spain. Although they had no knowledge of San Antonio's arrival in Seville 7 months earlier, they suspected that the mutineers aboard that ship might have made it back and succeeded in discrediting Magellan. 2 days after Christmas, the ship found anchorage in Jacciol Bay, where the crew obtained fresh and much-needed supplies, along with an Indonesian pilot who knew his way around these islands. Under his guidance, the crew sailed on as if in a trance, heading south, narrowly avoiding moors and cannibals, coral reefs and hidden sandbars. Eventually, Victoria put the Indonesian islands astern, passing through the Alor Strait and eluding pirates. As a lone vessel laden with spices, Victoria was especially vulnerable to predators. On January 8, 1522, Victoria entered the Banda Sea, extending west of the Moluccas, and the torpid weather suddenly changed. "We were struck by a fierce storm," Pigafetta reported, "which caused us to make a pilgrimage to Our Lady of Guidance. Running before the storm, we landed at a lofty island, but before reaching it, we were greatly worn out by the violent gusts of wind that came from the mountains of that island and the great currents of water. The squall nearly shattered the ship, but Elcano avoided the rocks and reefs, and when the seas moderated, Victoria limped to an anchorage close to shore." The next day, divers inspecting the hull discovered extensive damage, and the men gingerly hauled the vessel onto a beach to commence repairs and caulking. 2 weeks later, with repairs to the hull completed, Elcano gave the order to resume their voyage home, and the crew set sail on Saturday, January 25th. Victoria, having sailed 5 leagues or so, called at the island of Timor, towering nearly 10,000 feet above the shimmering surface of the Pacific. Everyone aboard her looked forward to a luxurious, satisfying time ashore, because food and spices, almonds, rice, bananas, ginger, and fragrant wood were all said to grow there in abundance. To guarantee cooperation with the islanders, Elcano ordered a party of sailors ashore in search of a bargaining chip. Said Pigafetta, "Since we had but few things, and hunger was constraining us, we restrained in the ship a chief and his son from another village." With their hostages in hand, the Armada's officers proceeded to negotiate for the food they so desperately needed. The strategy worked exactly as planned, and the recalcitrant islanders delivered a ransom of 6 buffalo, 12 goats, and as many pigs to the grateful yet rapacious sailors in exchange for the hostages' freedom.